There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the House of Cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today. In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Josh Reeves, Spellcasters, coming down in 3, 2, and 1.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, following the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality, coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome once again to another episode of Strange Planet. Great to have you with me. Some of you may be aware that I had a podcast called The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, which I guess we did about 40 episodes. It was done in kind of a documentary style. And one of the episodes was about Kurt Cobain and whether or not he was murdered. Of course, the official narrative is that he committed suicide by shotgun in a space above the attic in his home in the Seattle area. And there are so many inconsistencies with that story, the suicide note, the lack of fingerprints, a will, a prenup. And we'll get into all of that. Courtney Love, of course, has been a suspect in his murder. And over the weekend, I watched a fantastic documentary. It's one of a series called Spellcasters. And we're going to get into the possible murder of Kurt Cobain, the involvement perhaps of the CIA, Scientology, MK Ultra. Josh Reeves is with us. He's a Dallas, Texas-based researcher, filmmaker, radio talk show host who first learned of government crimes in the 1990s by reading Jim Marr's Crossfire. That's the way it started for a lot of us. That led him to start investigating black ops and secret societies. He gives his commentary and original point of view on news and current events, as well as information about chemtrails, secret ancient societies, bloodlines, hidden technologies, Freemasons, and the overall plan of the global elite. He's also produced a series called The Lost Secrets of Ancient America. That's a trilogy, and of course, the aforementioned Spellcasters series. Josh Reeves, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Richard, great to be with you again, man.
How many parts are to the Spellcasters? I watched Volume 2 on the weekend.
Well, technically, there's four. There's Volume 1, and then after about a year after Volume 1 came out, it came out with a Volume 1.5 because I had learned a very important piece of information that I didn't find during Volume 1, so that went in there. And then it took about 8 years for me to get these two newest films, Volume 2 and Volume 3, out, because when I started the initial research effort into these films, it just spiraled and became such a bigger monumental piece of research that it took that long just for me to be able to take all of this data and put it into a digestible form with a narrative that people could understand. So technically there's four parts. I don't know that there's going to be any more films in this series, but there will be one additional film coming out that isn't called Spellcasters, and that'll be coming out in a few months.
And many people know you, and you were on Coast to Coast AM with me recently, and we talked about The Lost Secrets of Ancient America and that wonderful trilogy, so people may not be as familiar with the Spellcasters series, and they should be, and hopefully they will be soon. Just give people kind of an overall sense. I mentioned, you know, we're going to talk Volume 2 and Kurt Cobain, but what is sort of the overall purpose of Spellcasters? What are you trying to reveal in this series?
Sure. Yeah, it originally started out in 2016 with Volume 1, and I'd worked on that for a few years prior to that. After I came out with The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 2, in 2014, I wanted to move into a different direction for a little while, and that's when I began work on what was Spellcasters Volume 1, and that began as a exploration into the origins of who controls Hollywood, who are the people behind what is Scientology and mind control, MKUltra, and the rest of it. So in Volume 1, I really focused mostly on MKUltra, Scientology, the origins of Scientology with L. Ron Hubbard and his connections with first the OSS and then later the CIA and MKUltra and Black Magic. And we have the admission of his own son in that film, where his son admits that Scientology is all based on black magic, and that these Thetans that they talk about are really these demonic entities that they use to be able to control people. And we also tie that in with how MKUltra, he was searching for this way to be able to create robotically controlled soldiers as well, which came from the information that they mined from the Project Paperclip scientists after World War II, because the Nazis were working on a similar program, and they were using things like what would later become known in MKUltra with the use of psychedelic drugs and black magic and all these things. And that was fully incorporated into Scientology by L. Ron Hubbard. And I had no idea about any of this. So that first film really is an exploration into that. I uncovered all kinds of things that connected me to stuff like the truth movement, the conspiracy movement, and the Scientology tentacles and connections into that. And there's, you know, now when I watch that 2016 Volume 1, there's some stuff in there now that kind of seems kind of dated to me, because that was it was created before Donald Trump was even elected the first time, and already I had some stuff in there that was connecting him to Russia and all this weird stuff. So after that, my exploration then took me into, okay, we covered Hollywood, we covered that. Let's go into the music business and discuss some of these conspiracies. One of the things that we talked about in Volume 1 is how a lot of these assassination methods that the CIA uses to make people's deaths look like accidents, drug overdoses, things like that. A lot of people in the Kennedy assassination, you mentioned my first exploration into this work being Crossfire by Jim Mars, and he certainly documented a lot of these people who were supposed witnesses, people who saw other shooters behind the grassy knoll and things like that. And a lot of these witnesses died in mysterious circumstances. So in Volume 1, we look at some of these CIA and assassination attempts and things that were done to make their deaths look like natural events and stuff like that. And in fact, you know, L. Ron Hubbard's own son, you know, he was murdered, or, well, it looks like he was murdered. It was supposedly a suicide, but nobody believes it was a suicide. And then in Volume 2, I started getting into, okay, let's see how much of this stuff is in the music business with these suspicious deaths and stuff like Kurt Cobain. So when my research was focusing around the MKUltra stuff and the mind control stuff, this is why in Spellcasters Volume 2, which, as you mentioned, is out now, I began with the Kurt Cobain thing because Courtney Love's father, Hank Harrison, is a major player in all of this to the extent that I had no idea before entering this research. It's mind-blowing because this guy was on the ground floor with MKUltra, even at a young age. I mean, his father took him to UC Berkeley as a child and enrolled him in this gifted children's program under the guise of this gifted children's program. That's what they were told it was. But it turns out that all the people that were running it were all the top MKUltra psychologists at Berkeley that were running this operation, this program. So Hank Harrison, he goes on to, you know, go to college. He just happens to hook up with a band called the Warlocks. He's known as somebody who is a cook of LSD. And then you start to see this transformation of this band, the Warlocks, into the Grateful Dead, and they sort of become the purveyors of the entire acid culture up to that time. So
yeah, they were the opening musical act for the Merry Pranksters and their Kool-Aid acid tests. And people forget that maybe that LSD was legal in California up until 1966. So these were big, you know, happenings to go and listen to the Grateful Dead and drop some acid and, you know, as Leary said, tune in and turn in. What was it now? Tune in, turn on, and tune out, or something like that.
Drop out. Yeah, drop out. That was the last thing.
Okay, well, I want to come back to Harrison and I mean, because this MKUltra thing is generational, as we'll discover. But let's just go back and very quickly. I talked a little bit about the scene, Kurt Cobain, April of 1994, you know, arguably the most influential, powerful person in rock and roll at that time, with the whole grunge scene and Nirvana, is found with a shotgun blast to his face. He's still clutching the shotgun, sprawled out in the green room, or a greenhouse kind of area above the garage in his Seattle home, after he'd been supposedly missing for several days. There's a note that is then decided by the police that that's a suicide note. But there's some, you know, obvious discrepancies here. Let's kind of walk through those. A lot of this, you kind of tell the story through an investigator by the name of Tom Grant, who was actually hired initially by Courtney Love, who calls him and says, you know, someone's using my husband, Kurt Cobain's credit card, but he's missing. I want to find out who's using his credit card. I want you to find Kurt. And then he starts to become immediately suspicious. If you could kind of maybe pick it up from there, what just doesn't line up in terms of the official narrative that Kurt Cobain committed suicide by shotgun?
Sure. Yeah, I think Tom Grant absolutely was sort of brought in to... I think he was absolutely brought in to find what he did. I think that they wanted this conspiracy to be put out there, and this narrative that he was creating to put out there that, you know, there was, that he had committed suicide and all the rest of this stuff. But what initially made me skeptical of this was that if you actually go and read the reports by the first responders and the people that were there on the scene, this, even as you just mentioned, this story of his base being blown away and all this stuff. It was complete nonsense. None of that was actually the facts when you actually look at it. His head was completely intact. There wasn't a big gaping hole and wound like you would expect it to be in a shotgun blast or any of this stuff. And combined with the fact that he had, you know, something like, I don't know, eight times the normal amount that would kill a person of heroin in his body, it was pretty clear that this was a setup. And when you looked at stuff like how the shotgun shell was ejected on the wrong side of the gun, and things like, you know, Kurt Cobain, he was, you know, I don't know, he's like 5'6 or something, 5'7, he wasn't very tall, but he had this huge shotgun with this muzzle brake on the end of it that would have been impossible for him to position, especially with that much heroin in his system, to pull the trigger. Everything was just wrong about the scene. There was only a small amount of blood, the first responder said, a small entry wound. So it was pretty clear that he was incapacitated, probably injected with heroin, given something. There was a drink that was found nearby, a soda can, and when they tested the soda can, they found Valium and a bunch of downers in it. So it appears that he was given a drink, he was drugged, he was incapacitated, and then after he was incapacitated, he was set up for his scene to look like a suicide. So when I started looking into, you know, the idea, because, of course, Courtney Love was suspect number one from day one beginning. But what I started to notice was that, you know, she had gone out and tried to recruit people from the punk rock world, people like Alan Wrench and El Duce from The Mentors. She had gone and tried to recruit all these people. And a lot of people even believe to this day that the people like El Duce and Alan Wrench were involved. But when you look at how this was set up, it's clear that this was not done by, you know, some random street junkie punks or something like that. This was done by somebody who definitely had a knowledge of these CIA assassination techniques that they use to make someone's death look like a suicide, like natural causes, et cetera, et cetera.
So let's just talk a little bit about, first of all, we should point out, none of Kurt Cobain's fingerprints are found on the shotgun. Although, I mean, I think the barrel is in his hand, but his fingerprints aren't found elsewhere on the gun, the trigger, for example, which is, you know, pretty important. Nor are his fingerprints found on, I guess, a pen or some sort of writing instrument next to what we were told was a suicide note. And we can talk a little bit about the questions surrounding whether or not that was a suicide note at all. But again, no fingerprints. Actually, let's just talk a little bit about the suicide note, because there's a little bit of writing that's kind of tacked on to the end to make it seem more like a suicide note.
Right. Well, originally that letter was supposed to be a letter to his fans saying he was leaving the music business. Kurt had become disillusioned with the music business. He had become disillusioned with the fact that they were now as big of a band as Guns N' Roses was just a few years before them, he was just disillusioned to be this mainstream person. So he was planning on quitting the music business, divorcing Courtney Love, taking his child, and basically going to live a quiet life on his royalties for the rest of his life. And the machinations and machinery behind Nirvana and the big blockbuster tours and everything, that was just something that they weren't going to allow to happen. So the suicide note, as they call it, was actually, again, this letter where he was telling his fans goodbye. And then his lawyer, I believe it was Kurt Cobain's lawyer, went on the record and admitted that she found a backpack that was left at her house by Kurt. And inside, she had found a piece of paper with Courtney Love's handwriting on it, where Courtney was essentially doing these different tests and handwriting tests to see if she could get close to the handwriting in the letter. And they've done handwriting analysis on this several times and determined that the end part of the so-called suicide note was 100% tacked on by someone else's handwriting. So that, to me, became the biggest smoking gun of the whole thing, is that the supposed suicide note was not entirely written in Kurt's handwriting. The parts that make it sound like a suicide note were added by somebody else.
Right. And then the lawyer, Rosemary Carroll,
Rosemary Carroll, yes.
Discovers handwriting either in a backpack or that was in Courtney Love's handwriting, where she appears to be practicing writing in Kurt's hand. in his handwriting style so that she could, as you say, add on to the suicide note to make it sound. Take an existing note, a farewell to fans, add a few sentences at the end to make it sound like he was saying goodbye, not just to his fans, but to the world that he wanted to die. And she had also, there was just 1 month earlier, while Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love were in Italy, I think they were in Rome, there was another incident involving a drug overdose, which was also sort of presented as a suicide attempt, which kind of sets the stage so that Courtney could say, see, he tried it in March, and then he tried it again in April. But there's some doubt as to whether he actually tried to commit suicide in Rome a month earlier, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, but even the attending doctors and whatnot have went on the record and said that they didn't feel that this was an overdose or a suicide attempt at all. They felt that this was either an accidental or intentional poisoning, and that they didn't have any sort of inkling that this was somebody trying to kill themselves at all, because anybody trying to kill themselves, you know, they're gonna do the job. They're going to get it done if they're going to try to make that kind of attempt. So, yes, that was what they set up the narrative, that he was suicidal, that he wanted to die. That whole thing was set up for that. But it seems that was the first attempt to kill him, that they just ended up inadvertently using that to sell his actual death later. But that was the first attempt off him, was in Rome. And then, of course, we know what happened after that. But, yeah, absolutely, the attending doctors and everything else said that they didn't feel that this was anybody trying to kill themselves.
All right, so let's take a little deep dive into Courtney Love. And you mentioned her father, Hank Harrison, who it would appear was brought into MK Ultra at a very early age. Under the cover, this was some sort of a program for gifted children, but it appears that they were experimenting with things like telepathy and remote viewing and so forth. And the person who ran that program, I can't remember his name, but he ended up being I think an associate or a roommate with Timothy Leary at Harvard, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. You had all of those guys that were involved in that stuff from the top. Yeah, and you're right. I get into that in volume one as well. The remote viewing and all that stuff with, Hal Puthoff and all those guys, and they were all involved in Scientology as well. That all came out of that. And then the Grateful Dead was also involved in that as well. So, yeah, it seems that these psychologists that were there at Berkeley that were attempting to find certain children that had the mental capacity to be able to do this, they were looking for stuff like high IQ. It said that Hank Harrison had a 165 IQ, which he also said that his daughter Courtney Love had. And there was, you know, this whole program was designed to try and create these people that could be programmed into doing whatever they're told to do, and then they can inadvertently program other people and make them do it where they don't even know that they're being programmed. So, yeah, all of this stuff is very, 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 very interesting when you start getting into the origins of how it coincided with that 60s music movement that we talked about earlier.
And so the Hank Harrison, Courtney Love's father, and he's MK Ultra, he apparently also gave Courtney, when she was quite young, LSD.
Yes, at 4 years old, he was giving her LSD by the time she was 4 years old, and it seems that he was trying to, whether he knew it or not, and was conscious of it or not, he was definitely already starting to program other people during that time, and it was clear that he was doing that with members of the Grateful Dead as well.
Right, and so at a certain point, Hank Harrison and his daughter Courtney Love, not her real name, obviously, they become...
Oh, Frank Barron was the guy's name. I'm sorry, Richard. Frank Barron was the guy who you were mentioning earlier.
Right. He was a roommate with Timothy Leary, of course, who started LSD experiments at Harvard, and Timothy Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was involved at Harvard and volunteered for one of these... he was a guinea pig, basically, and they gave him LSD and some sort of trauma, and of course, we know what happened with Ted Kaczynski. MK Ultra, right? So, but getting back to Courtney Love and her father, they become estranged, and he kind of loses track of her, and then she shows up at his house later in life in Dublin, and obviously, you know, I don't know if he's disturbed or he's taking delight in what she has become, because she sounds like a complete sociopath.
No, you're absolutely correct, Richard. That is an astute thing to point out, because if you watch the clips, and people can see this in my film Soulcasters 2, you can tell that this guy is actually getting joy and delight out of watching her antics and watching the things that she does. And you can see that throughout the time, throughout a bunch of clips with Hank Harrison in them, because it's almost like he's taking pride in his work. He's not saying, oh, I can't believe she's doing that. They're asking, well, you know, what do you think about your daughter doing these antics? And he just starts laughing at it, because to him, this is the achievement of all of his work. That's what he considers her to be.
And she writes this poem. This is in the early 80s. She writes this poem, I don't know what it's called, a forecasted date or something, where she talks about,
you know, future date.
Future date. She's going to get to the top. Nothing's going to stop her. She'll kill whoever gets in her way. And it's very, you know, obviously very prophetic, it would seem. But her meeting Kurt Cobain, I mean, her whole life, she kind of plans out and decides, you know, she's going to meet famous people. She's going to become a famous rock star. And then she does it.
Yeah, she was telling people at a very early age that she was going to marry a rock star, take all his money, all the rest of this stuff. She was going to be friends with people like Michael Stipe from R.E.M., and then later she becomes friends with him. So when you start to hear all that, then that's when someone like me, a researcher like me, starts to put the dots together and goes, okay, what we've got going on here is you have the perception by Courtney Love that all of this was just her achieving her plan and all this. But it really wasn't. It was almost as if it was written from a script, and that she was just following and programmed. And we know that a lot of that does go on with some of this generational programming within MK Ultra.
But as we'll discover, it seems like everybody in that music scene were MK Ultra. It was, you know, one MK Ultra as the perp, and another MK Ultra as the victim. We'll take a quick time out, continue to discuss Spellcasters Volume 2, Kurt Cobain, with Josh Reeves right here on Strange Planet. Don't go away.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
The truth will set you free, free, free. But first, it will really tick you off. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we are back with Josh Reeves, and we're discussing Volume 2 of Spellcasters, MK Ultra, Scientology, the CIA, and the murder, in quotes, of Kurt Cobain. The YouTube channel, first of all, how do people watch the YouTube channel, Josh?
I just go to YouTube, and it's Josh Reeves, the Global Reality Channel, and the Spellcasters Volume 1, Volume 2, and Volume 3 can be found in my download shop. And if people go to my YouTube channel, Josh Reeves, the Global Reality Channel, they will be able to find links there to buy all the documentaries and everything there, Richard.
Okay, so The people around Kurt Cobain, whether we're talking about other band members like David Grohl, or we're talking about, I mean, one of, I guess, Kurt Cobain's, maybe one of his early inspirations, Henry Rollins, who at that time I think was in a band called Black Flag, and Courtney Love, of course, who we talked about. They all seem to have very, almost this parallel life path. Talk to me a little bit about that.
That's very, very strange. It was just one of those things that I was expecting to find. You know, you got to remember, Richard, I was a fan of all of these people. You know, I saw Nirvana twice live as a teenager. So I was into all this music. You know, this wasn't something for me where this was just a passing thing. I was into all of this music. So to find this and to find all these connections to these people, it was mind-blowing even for me. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we've got reports. There's been reports of people that were involved in MKUltra that claimed they saw Kurt Cobain in the 1980s in an underground MKUltra facility. And then you've got stuff like you mentioned with Henry Rollins. I mean, Henry Rollins was involved with the government trial. He admits to this. He was involved in the government trials for Ritalin. And if you go and search Ritalin MKUltra, you'll find that these test programs for MKUltra were 100% all apart. There's been volumes that have been written about it by the government. It was a part of these MKUltra behavioral modification program, and definitely Henry Rollins was involved in that. And it appears that a lot of these people, I mean, I think more of them probably than not. I mean, Billy Corgan is in this as well. I mean, Billy Corgan was originally supposed to be from Smashing Pumpkins. He was supposed to be the original target of Courtney Love's, you know, marry a rock star and take his money campaign. And when she goes to, you know, from what we know from what she's told in the narrative, that she was going to basically hook up with Billy and ride off into the sunset. When she shows up on the scene that night, Billy's with another woman. So, strangely enough, playing right across the street from where the Smashing Pumpkins were playing that night was Nirvana. She just calmly and coolly walks across the street, hooks up with Kurt Cobain that night, and then the rest is history. And as you mentioned, Richard, it's hard to think that this isn't people living out some pre-planned script, and none of this was by accident.
Right, right. Courtney Love reportedly, as you mentioned earlier, tried to recruit some pretty shady characters sort of in the underground punk rock movement. One of them was this character called El Duce, who is just kind of a complete wastrel by all accounts. He's a raging alcoholic, and there's a clip in Spellcasters Volume 2 of an appearance I think he made on the Howard Stern show, he claims and took a lie detector test and passed to this account that he was approached by Courtney Love, who wanted to recruit him to kill Kurt Cobain and make it look like a suicide.
Absolutely. And, you know, Richard, even though I didn't put it in the film, I did have my suspicions, and though I wasn't able to find anything concrete, I definitely did have my suspicions that El Duce was probably involved in MKUltra to some extent as well, because in the 1980s, when the PMRC hearings were going on with Tipper Gore, one of the bands that she discussed and one of the songs that she discussed in the music that she wanted to ban was the band The Mentors and their song called Golden Shower. So the fact that he was already involved in high-profile stuff, you know, like the PMRC hearings, even before all this stuff happened with Courtney Love, was very suspicious to me. But, yes, he went on the record and stated that she offered him $50,000 to kill Kurt Cobain and make it look like a suicide. And he as you mentioned, he passed all of these lie detector tests and whatnot that he was given. So I don't think there's any reason to believe that he was lying about this. And what's interesting is that even when he first came out with the information and started talking about it, the first person El Duce says he got contacted by was none other than Hank Harrison, Courtney Love's father, and that he was interested and wanted to know all this stuff about, you know, what she said, what she asked him, what she offered him, and then offered to El Duce. Well, she tried to have me whacked. She tried to put HIV tainted blood in my toothpaste and all this stuff. So He also said that he was laughing about it and acting like it was hysterical that she was doing all this stuff. So again, it does appear that the people within the punk rock world that she was trying to recruit were people that she thought that no one would either suspect or would suspect and would just get away with it. But it does appear to me, and people see this in the film, that all this stuff was just a cover, and that what she really needed was somebody who had training in these CIA assassination techniques.
Right. El Duce is interviewed by this documentary filmmaker, and kind of lets a name slip, which would be Richard Allen Wrench. He mentions the name Allen and says, well, I'll let the FBI, track him down and take care of that. In other words, El Duce basically saying he didn't do it, didn't think she was serious about it. He would have done it if he knew she was serious, but he didn't do it, and then drops this name Allen on camera. Lo and behold, 2 days later, El Duce struck by a train from behind, decapitated, dead.
Yeah, and clearly, that was definitely because of him letting this guy's name slip, Allen Wrench. But at the same time, I don't believe Allen Wrench. I think Allen Wrench definitely was involved in the death of El Duce. I don't think there's anything that can really, really contend that. But he even admits it. He says it in interviews. But he also says he killed Kurt Cobain. And you can really tell that he's not telling the truth when it comes to the Kurt Cobain thing. I think he definitely was involved in the death of El Duce. But I don't think that he had the skills or the know-how to pull off the setup of Kurt Cobain's death to make it look like a suicide the way they did. They really needed somebody who definitely had some training in this to come in.
Enter Henry Rollins, of all people.
Well, yeah, and listen, I want to be clear about this. I really honestly don't even want to be talking about this element, the Henry Rollins element of it, in this interview. I'll be honest with you.
That's fine. We don't have to.
I sat on that. No, we can touch on it. I just want to say that I want to give the reasons why, because it's part of the story. Because the reason is because I sat on that information for like 8 years while I was making this film. I never even told my audience. I didn't talk about it on my show or anything, because that's a piece of this puzzle that is uniquely my information. Nobody had put this Henry Rollins thing together before me. But because I was such a fan of Henry Rollins, in fact, I met Henry Rollins in 1998. And I was just such a huge fan of him. I'd been paying attention to his spoken word stuff, the stuff he talked about in interviews. And I started to see that this story about his friend, Joe Cole, which he's told many times. He was on Unsolved Mysteries back in the day as well, the TV show. And I noticed after repeated retellings of Henry Rollins' story, I started to notice discrepancies and notice things that didn't add up and make sense. And the biggest one of them was that he always, in a lot of the subsequent retellings, always seems to leave out the fact that when they were attacked, when his friend Joe Cole was killed, he tells the story now that we were coming home from the grocery store. We stopped by the video store when we came home. But in actual fact, they were coming home from a Courtney Love Hole concert. And in the subsequent retellings, he always seemed to leave that piece of information out. So initially, Richard, that's what led me to suspecting Henry Rollins might have some involvement in this, because there's a page that comes out of Courtney Love's journal, which I show in the film, that she's basically, it seems that she's entertaining the idea that what Henry Rollins said about the death of his friend and roommate Joe Cole, who was also best friends with Courtney Love, by the way, and a roadie for both Black Flag and Hole, she had made an indication in this journal page that she didn't believe Henry Rollins' story about his death. She says, Joe was killed by a satanic land shark, and then in parentheses, she said, oh, no, I'm sorry. You know, it was black guys. It was black guys, right? That's what Henry Rollins says.
Right, just
so it was
I just wanted to quickly summarize it and leave it for people to watch Spellcasters Volume 2 to get the details. We don't want to give everything away, but Henry Rollins and Joe Cole coming home late night from a Hole concert, although later he changed the story, supposedly set upon by the black gang members who were supposed League, you know, going to rob their house and then kill them, and they shot Joe Cole in the head, left him dead on in their living room. Henry Rollins then claimed, you know, that he escaped and they narrowly missed death when they shot at him, and so forth, so obviously Courtney Love not buying that story and thinks that Henry Rollins was involved in the death of his friend Joe Cole. And people can again watch Spellcasters Volume 2 to get the lowdown on why Henry Rollins, or how Henry Rollins fits into, you know, Kurt Cobain's death. Josh, let's take another.
I want to mention real quick, Richard. That was the other thing that led me to being suspicious about Henry Rollins, was he said that he thought that the people who killed Joe Cole and people who robbed them did so because Rick Rubin had been at his house the week before, and we don't really know why, supposedly to hear some recordings. But he said, oh, well, the MTV guy, they probably thought, oh, the MTV guy lives there, he's probably got money, let's go rob him. But the thing of it is, at that time, Henry Rollins was not the MTV guy yet. He didn't become the MTV guy until 1992, after his album came out, and they became very big. But that was the other thing that led me to go, okay, something's going on here, because he's trying to make it seem like, oh, they just saw a Rolls Royce and that's why they came and killed him. But again, that doesn't add up.
Okay, we'll take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll find out how Scientology may fit into all of this as well. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. We're now crossing a zone of turbulence. Please return your seats and food trays to their upright position and make sure your carry-on luggage is safely stowed. You're about to leave everything you know behind. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Strange Planet.
And we're back with Josh Reeves. Josh Reeves' YouTube channel is called Josh Reeves, the Global Reality Channel. There are links there if you want to purchase the Spellcasters series of documentaries, Volume 1, Volume 1.5, Volume 2, and Volume 3. We're talking about Volume 2 right now, and this involves the murder, likely, of Kurt Cobain. And we're also delving into MKUltra. How does Scientology fit into all of this?
Well, that's a great question, Richard. And again, that's what I explored in Volume 1, was all of these different assassination techniques, and a lot of people that have been involved with Scientology have died under suspicious circumstances and appear to have been murdered or suicided. And so that's what led me to finding out and looking into the connections with this stuff with the music industry. But of course, Hank Harrison talks about how Courtney Love, at a very young age, was brought into Scientology by her mother, who was also a trained psychologist, just like her father, Hank Harrison, was. And then, of course, it was another one of those things, Richard, where I just kept hearing and seeing little tidbits and connecting them together. And so when I had, and again, I don't want to give too much of this away, and I'm not being cagey here, folks. You have to understand that I'm careful to talk about some of this information, because some of this stuff, and this is not a line, this is not trying to get you to buy the documentary, literally some of this stuff, especially this stuff with Henry Rollins and the rest of this stuff, this is new information that nobody else has put together or put out there yet. I'm the first person to put this out and explore into this stuff. So a lot of this stuff is very new. So I want to be cautious and not give it all away. But the key thing of it is that I've been started putting together these things that I heard Henry Rollins say about Scientology, about living next door to the Scientology Center in L.A., and about, all this, having dinner with people like Isaac Hayes at the Scientology Center shortly before he died. So that's when I started realizing, oh, okay, I got to go back to the research that I did for Spellcasters Volume 1, where I was connecting MKUltra and Scientology, and how L. Ron Hubbard basically took all of the things when he was involved with MKUltra, with the OSS and the CIA, and took these things and incorporated them into Scientology, because they sent him over to England to meet Aleister Crowley. I talk about this in Volume 1, to try and understand these different magic techniques that they were using, that he was using, and they wanted to incorporate those into the mind control program using LSD, because they had already discovered in Germany before the end of World War II that this was what the Nazis were working on, trying to create robotically controlled human super soldiers. They were using black magic in combination with psychedelic drugs such as LSD and Ibogaine and others, and trying to create these mind controlled assassins. So when I started putting all that together and realizing, oh my goodness, you know, there's Henry Rollins, he's involved in this MKUltra Ritalin test. He's got connections to Scientology. You know, she's recruiting from the punk rock world, trying to find somebody. And she really, at that time, probably wanted someone who she thought, at least, had experience in possibly murdering someone and making it look like something other than what it was a murder. So that's ultimately what led me to going, okay, Scientology, Courtney Love, Henry Rollins, Kurt Cobain, MKUltra. You had all of the right details were all there. And that's what ultimately led me into connecting all of this together. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is why you had people later that were involved with Scientology that were found killed in these ways that looked like suicide. It all stems from that original CIA thing where they were offing people and trying to make it look like that. And that's where the connection comes in between MKUltra, CIA, Courtney Love, Hank Harrison, and all of that. So it's all in the film, but man, it's a fascinating research rabbit hole, Richard. It really is.
It is. It's an amazing rabbit hole. You get lost in it almost. As I did over the weekend, Volume 2, Spellcasters. And again, go to Josh Reeves, the Global Reality Channel on YouTube. And there's a link there where you can download, not only the Spellcasters series, but also the Lost Secrets of Ancient America trilogy, which are fantastic as well. Just got a few minutes left here, but there's also an interesting chapter. And again, we won't get into all the details. We want people to watch Spellcasters Volume 2, all of them actually. But that is, again, coming back to this Scientology and the CIA really pushing LSD into the populace, into the culture, the counterculture, creating the counterculture through bands like, well, the Warlocks, who later became the Grateful Dead, and people like Ken Kesey and the Merry Pranksters going around California on their Further bus and popularizing the use of LSD. At the same time, as you point out, Scientology was sponsoring these 1-800 helplines where people who were having a bad LSD trip could call in and get talked down, I guess is the word, right? A perfect opportunity for, you know, to insert some programming.
Absolutely. And these things they had in San Francisco and places like that where people could go, and if they were having a bad trip, you know, they could be guided down. All this, all that whole technique for guiding people through trips was created by Hank Harrison, Courtney Love's father. He created that. That was a piece of the puzzle that really blew me away, was finding out that he was the guy that created all of these guided come down techniques for bad trips. And that, you know, when you look at stuff like Operation Midnight Climax, where they were bringing guys in as johns for prostitutes, and then they were dousing them with LSD as well. All of that stuff was all a part of that. And again, Hank Harrison was at the forefront of this because he was trained in psychology, and that's what they would do. They would bring psychologists, and they would train other people to then in themselves be psychologists and not even know that they were being programmed to do so. I got to tell you, Richard, you know, when I got done with this work, when I got done with this research, it made me start to question even more, like, you know, not that who is involved in this MKUltra stuff in the music business, but almost who isn't, because it's almost as if a lot of the big names in the music industry, specifically in the 1960s counterculture movement, and then on into the 70s, 80s, and then into the 90s with the grunge and alternative movement, it seems that almost every single one of these people that were involved, especially a lot of them who later died tragic deaths, all seemed to fit a profile, a background profile that they liked. You know, people who were very fiercely independent, and people who were came from broken homes and things of that nature. So you start to see that the people who became these counterculture icons and music industry icons all shared a similar background in their family history, and that's exactly what they look for.
Yeah, it just becomes apparent that our the arts really are programmed from the top down. The counterculture was really anything but. I mean, it was created by the establishment to appear like, you know, here's your opportunity to rebel against the establishment. Meanwhile, the counterculture is created by, you know, the CIA and Scientology and high-ranking Pentagon officials and so forth.
You know, Richard, there's a piece here. I'm going to give a piece to your listeners. It's one of those pieces where I just couldn't fit it in the film because it didn't really have a place. But if people go and search CIA and the art movement, art scene, they'll find that a lot of these like well-known impressionist painters and stuff of the 20th century, a lot of those people were also MKUltra. They were involved in the literally, you said the art arts, but they were literally involved in the art world as well. And you had MKUltra people that were involved in the painting and art world as well. And that really blew me away because it really gives a glimpse to how far and deep their tentacles really go.
Right. Well, the great Canadian communications theorist Marshall McLuhan talked about the arts are in the pockets of the secret societies. He was talking about this way back in the early 1960s. Josh, congratulations on the Spellcasters series. We're going to have to meet again and talk about Volume 3. And again, if people go to YouTube, Josh Reeves, the Global Reality Channel. And it's a terrific channel. And of course, links there so that you can buy or screen the Spellcaster series, as well as Lost Secrets of Ancient America. Josh, great speaking with you again. Thank you so much.
Richard, thank you so much. You've been such a great help and really a champion of my work as of late, and I cannot thank you enough, my friend. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.